Blog Talk Radio.
We're back. Welcome to the Core Show for Dire Sports Radio. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz, Dire Sports Radio on blogtalkradio.com/Dire Sports Radio. We are being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill, the ultimate place for the sports diehard. Don't believe me? Stop by 2751 East Broadway in Long Beach, California. Ask for Kieran, and you'll find out exactly what you mean. Because at Gallagher's Bar and Grill, I guarantee you, that you'll enjoy good food, make fast friends, and enjoy your favorite team on high-definition TV. It's been a while since we have done a broadcast for Dire Sports Radio. A lot of changes in life, a lot of change going on, particularly with a certain franchise in Southern California known as the Los Angeles Lakers. It is a new era. Kobe Bryant has retired. Byron Scott has been retired. Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss are yet to be retired from heading up the Lakers as far as the plan goes. Well, now we're going to see what that plan is because Kobe Bryant is out and his caretaker, Byron Scott, is out. It's an episode in which we are going to explore the future of the Lakers because it's a new team, but the same dream of winning a championship, trying to get to number 17 before the Boston Celtics can get to number 18, the team that we've been chasing for decades in terms of most NBA titles. That new era begins now, and I am privileged to join one of the biggest Laker diehards out there and a diehard sports radio supporter for the last 3.5 years. He is a good friend of mine. He is a man that believes in God. And he is also a man that will do anything for anybody at any time. He is also very passionate about the Lakers and very opinionated about the Lakers. So that's going to make for great radio here. Introducing the one and only Mr. 5-star 411 himself, Mr. Sohail Majdi. Sohail, good to be talking with you back on the Core Show here. How are you, sir?
Steve, I'm doing good. And I'm blessed to say that Lakers are going to be starting real soon. And I'm so pumped at the fact that we're going to have a new coach that we hijacked from Golden State. He came down the Highway 5 to us, and he's going to bring us some of that mojo that we need, the championship swagger. That's going to make it so much better this year. Steve, thank you for having me. I'm excited to get this thing rocking and rolling.
Well, we're going to be talking until about 7:25 p.m. before I break off to do another show from 7:30 to 8:30 on Radio AFS. On all things football, talking about NFL Week 6 specifically and some of the storylines that came out of that. So we want to get right to it. You mentioned Luke Walton coming down the 5 freeway to reunite with the Lakers, a player that contributed considerably to 2 championship teams not too long ago, although it seems like forever if you're a Laker diehard. He's the guy, and, you know, the Lakers have been operating the coaching carousel the last few years, having let go of Phil Jackson, hired Mike Brown. He lasted about 1 season and 4 games. Then you hire Mike D'Antoni when you could have brought Phil Jackson back, but went with D'Antoni instead because of Steve Nash. We saw what happened there. And then Mike D'Antoni doesn't work out, and you bring in Byron Scott, and he doesn't work out. Well, he did work out in terms of he did exactly what the Lakers wanted to do, and that's watch after Kobe Bryant until Kobe Bryant retired. The minute he retired, Byron Scott was retired. So now it's Luke Walton. What distinguishes Luke Walton from any other head coach the Lakers have had since Phil Jackson, Sohail?
What distinguishes him is he is a killer combination of 3 things. One, he grew up a great basketball player's son, and he was the smallest kid, the runt of the litter, and he's the one that became the best player of the entire Walton family. So he has an amazing pedigree of knowing what it takes to be a champion. He saw his dad do it firsthand, and then he was able to also be a champion and earn it himself as a Laker. He understands Laker culture, and he has had the best head coaches throughout his life. Lute Olson, University of Arizona, probably arguably the greatest college coach of the last 30 years. Some people say Krzyzewski. I like Lute Olson. And then he had the opportunity to be under Phil Jackson. Phil loved Luke Walton. He did everything to bring him to New York. It didn't happen as a coach there. And he went to Golden State. He got to be under Steve Kerr and see how the culture of this generation, how it works. And he's seen championship pedigree from the time he was a little kid till this point right now as the youngest head coach in the NBA.
Well, what I like about Luke Walton is that when Byron Scott came in, he was talking about this team is going to play defense, and they never played defense. What Luke Walton was talking about in his initial press conference is that how to make the game fun for the players because, you know, we take this stuff pretty seriously, as you know, Sohail, almost to the point where it's almost like a business for us and that if it's not going well, we assume our lives are going to be over. But that's not the case. It's supposed to be fun at the end of the day. I channeled Tom Selleck's words in the movie Mr. Baseball playing his character Jack Elliott says, baseball is a game and games are supposed to be fun. So is basketball. And that's what Luke Walton is going to do. He's going to make it fun for the players. Now, is he the guy that can get this team to the next level? I don't know at this point.
he's a rookie head coach, meaning he's got an opportunity to prove himself, and will need to prove himself, and that's probably going to take about 3 years, and that's what I think the Lakers should do with Luke Walton, is give him at least 3 years to mold this team and see, and then build a team around him. You know, like adding Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov, which are good first steps, but naturally we might learn a little bit more unless one of our young players develops into a superstar. We'll talk more about that in a second. But Luke Walton came in with the right mindset in terms of relating to this team, and that's making it fun for the players. Another thing I like what he's done is actually telling Nick Young he's got to play defense. He hasn't talked about defense in his press conferences. He's just talked about the team. But behind the scenes, behind the cameras, he has actually gone to Nick Young and say, hey, you've got to play some defense to get out there. And Nick Young has actually tried to play defense. So he's going to preach defense to this team, but he's not going to do it through the media. Through the media, he's going to keep everything positive, everything upbeat. I think the players are going to respond to that. But behind the scenes, if he needs something from a player, he's not going to be afraid to ask that player to do what he needs to do. And then, of course, he has Brian Shaw, B-Shaw at his side, who's going to be his top assistant, but it's also kind of the opposite of Luke Walton. He's going to be the bad cop. Luke Walton will be the good cop. Brian Shaw is going to be the bad cop. It's a great combination. And speaking of Brian Shaw, what do you think it means to Luke Walton and to the Lakers that he is back, you know, with the Lakers on this coaching staff? What kind of impact do you think he'll have on this particular team, Sohail?
I think Brian Shaw was an amazing hire. You know me, I'm a little bit biased. I'm a UCSD gaucho. Brian Shaw took training camp in Santa Barbara, UCSD, just to get the feel and the vibe and the energy and the coolness. Blasting that music, the positivity. Brian Shaw did a great job when he was a head coach with the Nuggets. He didn't, unfortunately, you know, the team just didn't pan out there. But he is a great leader, another person that understands the game. He's very cerebral, and it's a huge blessing to have a guy that was a head coach in the league for several years, be your assistant coach, someone you played with. You understand Brian Shaw and Luke were integral as part of the young Lakers of the 2000s.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the Lakers, you know, have a situation, have a coaching staff that is perfect for this team. Speaking of this team, obviously there's a lot of young talent, and then Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov are kind of the battle-tested veterans of the team, along with Lou Williams. Before we get to, in a minute, where I'm going to ask you, you know, the young Laker that is the key to the future that begins this season, because the future is now. Before we get that, what do you think the starting five is going to be on opening day? What do you anticipate as far as who is going to be playing in each position as a starter, Sohail?
Man, that is a tough question. I'm sorry for the silence. I'm thinking about this. The starting five, you're going to get your point guard in D'Angelo Russell. You're going to have your center in Timofey Mozgov. Your starting forward is going to be Luol Deng. Your power forward is going to be Julius Randle. The two guard is the question mark that still has not been decided yet. It might be Jordan Clarkson, or Jordan Clarkson might be the sixth man of the year if Jordan Clarkson comes off the bench. It might be Lou Williams as a starting two guard, or it might be Nick Young. It's a huge question mark on who's going to be the two guard still. But if it was my choice to make, if I was Luke Walton, I would start Nick Young, believe it or not, because when you have a second unit coming in with Brandon Ingram, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance, and Huertas, and whoever else you want at the five spot, that is the most scary second unit in the NBA.
Well, I see the starting five a little bit differently. You know, D'Angelo Russell is going to start at the point. He was drafted to be the Lakers' point guard of the future. So naturally, you're going to start him at that position to see what he's going to do this year without Byron Scott and Kobe Bryant potentially stunting his growth. I see Jordan Clarkson at the two, actually, and here's why. We don't know what kind of defensive player D'Angelo Russell is going to be. I think he can be a good defender if he sets his mind to it. Clarkson does play defense, though, and he can hit some shots, and he can break guys off the dribble. He's also 6'6", 6'7". So he's an ideal height. He's at an ideal height to play the two guard. At the three, Luol Deng. At the four, Julius Randle. At the five, Timofey Mozgov. No question about it. That's your front court. So, and then off the bench, you have Lou Williams, a veteran, instant offense. Not the greatest defensive player, but instant offense. That's a guy you want coming off the bench is either your point or your two, along with Brandon Ingram, who could play the three or the four because of that wingspan. And then we go, and then we go from there. So I kind of see, because ultimately, if the Lakers want to see how Angelo and Clarkson are going to work together, you want to play them together, particularly at the beginning of the game. If one of those guys starts, you're going to want to start both of them. So, and then have your veteran instant offense coming off the bench, specifically with Lou Williams, who I think will have a positive impact on Brandon Ingram, who struggled to shoot the ball so far in the preseason, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But that's kind of how I see the starting five going, is the young backcourt of Angelo and Clarkson, seeing how they play together, and our veterans up front, not Randall, mind you, because he's in year number three, or really year number two when you think about it, but with Timothy Mozgov and Lou Alden, who both play well in the pick and roll that the Lakers are going to run in their half-court sets, along with opening up the court and getting these guys out in the open floor out of the 80s Lakers teams that we used to love to watch so much. That's another thing Walton's going to bring to L.A. of what he operated in Golden State. So that's how I see the starting five going. But in regards to Brandon Ingram, he has struggled to shoot the ball so far this season. I've already heard the word bust put out there on that. He's a number two draft pick, and I got something I want to say about that. As far as a number two draft pick and what being a number two draft pick actually means, but are you concerned at this point, Sohill, about Brandon Ingram's trouble with shooting the ball, or that he doesn't quite seem to quite know where to go on the court? How concerned are you at this point that he seems to be struggling shooting the floor and with court awareness, particularly when he's on the offensive side of the floor?
The most important factor is this with Brandon Ingram. He is focused to be the best player because he is getting a lot out of the NBA Association when it comes to getting a lot of spotlight. But look, this is what's going on with him. He came out and he went to Summer League. He didn't shoot that well in Summer League. And then he played with the NBA Olympic team. He did better. He actually, people would come up to Popovich, they'd go up to Kevin Durant, and they were just saying how awesome this kid is. So I trust those guys' opinions. Right now he's got the jitters. He's nervous. He's freaking out a little bit on offense. But his effort's there. He's playing great defense. I like to call him Count Ingram because he's dressed like a freaking Dracula on draft day. If you see that hideous gray and black alpha, he looked like Count Vampire, Count Ingram, blah. I want to suck your blood.
I thought Halloween had come early when he pulled that one. I thought Halloween had come early, and I'm thinking, wow, did they move up the date of Halloween? Because when I saw that, my first thought was, wow, Halloween must be on a different day now because that didn't look normal.
It did not, but he plays really scary defense, and that's what I like to tell people. With his wingspan, there's no such thing as an easy shot on him, and he hustles. He knows how to play angles. He's disciplined. He's coachable. He's likable. He took over Kobe's locker room, and he's going to take the Lakers to the promised land. Not now, but 2020, 2021, watch out now.
Well, I'm going to put on my lecturer's hat for a second. I'm going to lecture people as to what being a number two draft pick means. It means your career is projected to have a great deal of upside. Now, we often hear the word upside is kind of thrown around in sports, like both teams played hard. And what players say in the media, the overseed Wallace days, both teams played hard. Both teams played hard. The answer to every question, you hear it all the time. But here's the downside of upside. Here's the truth about upside, and that's what we do on the shows. We tell you the truth. Upside takes a while to get to. A career, you know, your average NBA career is about 5 years. Therefore, I'm of the opinion that we don't want to start judging players until they're about 5 years in. Three at least. Because at the end of the day, playing in the NBA against established pros is an adjustment period, and some players don't take very long. Hey, Steph Curry in the last couple of years has really blown up, but before that, we knew he could shoot. We didn't know about the ball handling skills. We didn't know about the passing skills. We knew he could shoot, but we also didn't know he would play this well in the NBA. But he wasn't an overnight success. He wasn't an instant success in the NBA. It took time, and he's not going to end up being the defensive player that Brandon Ingram is going to end up being, to your point, so about the long wingspan, his ability to play angles and hustling, which is the key to playing defense ultimately. So for those people that want to talk bust status on him at this point because he's struggling to shoot the ball in the preseason, then go ahead and – okay, you know what? I'm just going to say this straight out. Shut up now, because honestly, assessing a player as a buzzer, even considering the possibility of that, either you're a competitor of somebody who's outside the market here, or quite frankly, you don't get it whatsoever. There is no way that he is a bust at this point. There is no way you can make any assessment on him at this point, because he doesn't know whether he's going to start or come off the bench. He's definitely going to end up coming off the bench, in my opinion. So declaring him a bust, and the only reason why that talk is even out there right now, Sohail, because he was compared to Kevin Durant right away. Well, he is a player like Kevin Durant. No, he's not. Because Kevin Durant, you know why we're talking about Kevin Durant like that? Because we know what he can do. We know what he's done. All we know at this point is what Brandon Ingram can do. We don't know what he's done at the pro level because he hasn't played in a real game yet. Therefore, to compare him to Kevin Durant before he actually has a chance to prove that he can play like Kevin Durant in the NBA, and that's the key, in the NBA. Because believe me when I tell you, college basketball and the NBA are two different things, that I can prove it. Maybe 20 to 25% of college players in, or college players will end up playing in the NBA. The other 75% don't. You see where I'm going with that? Don't compare him to a superstar player until we know he can play like that in the NBA. You know, so it's at the end of the day, Brandon Ingram is a project, and that's what being a number two draft pick. The higher the draft pick you are, the more upside you have, but you have to give overnight. Even in an impatient town like L.A., you can't control human nature. You can't control how things are. So for those of you that are talking bust at this point, shut up and just let him develop and then make an assessment about 3 years from now like a normal smart person would.
Steve, I love it. I love it. You tell them. There's so many people out there that are freaking out, that are Laker haters, that just the idea of them rebuilding with these top lottery picks and actually possibly being really good again really fast after Kobe leaves, that is a nightmare. They don't want that. They don't want that. So any opportunity to bash on these young kids, to hurt their morale, everyone's taking a jump. Taking a chance, going after it. But you know what? If you're a true fan of sports when it comes to the NBA, you know that these are kids playing with men. When we have players that are mostly in their early 20s or late teens going up against guys that have been playing for 10 years or eight years, it's going to be tough. But you know what? We're going to have twice as many victories as we did last year. That's my prediction, Steve. Last year we won 17. I say we won 35 this year. I really do see that kind of improvement.
Well, I was going to ask, and since you brought that, I was going to ask you about that, is, you know, how many wins we expect. If the Lakers get into the 30 column, I'll be absolutely delighted. If they get to 35, I'll be ecstatic. If they get to 40, I'll throw a party. Honestly, because and it's not so much the Lakers I'm worried about. It's a conference that they are playing in that is loaded and deep. It's the West. You know, Golden State reloaded with Kevin Durant. Portland is getting better. They have arguably the second best backcourt in the NBA production-wise with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And then you have Houston and James Harden, who are always good, not great. And then you have, obviously, the San Antonio Spurs, you know, who got rid of Tim Duncan. He retired finally, and, you know, that's going to make them a little faster, a little bit more athletic, which makes him a little bit scarier in these days of the NBA. Spurs obviously are going to be a contender coming out of the West this year. Memphis is usually good, although I don't know how good they'll continue to be. I think their window is closed as far as the championship, but they're still a playoff-caliber team. So they're, and New Orleans figures to be better if Anthony Davis can play the whole season like he did last year. They went to the playoffs the year before last, but were jacked up last year by injuries all across the board, particularly to Davis, who's their best player. So there's a lot of competition in the West. And so if the Lakers get into 30-win column, I'll be very, very, very happy about that. If it doesn't happen, I wouldn't be surprised because you have a new coach, you've got new players, and we don't know who the go-to guy is going to be. But if the Lakers get into 30-win column, great. 35 wins, awesome. 40 wins, absolutely spectacular. So we'll see what happens with that. So what number would you put on the Laker? So you think 34, right? So, Hill, I'm thinking I'll say 30.
Yeah, 30, 35. We're going to double it.
35. Okay.
35.
I hope you're right. I'm going to reserve judgment at this point because I don't know what this team is going to be. I know how they want to play, but I don't know how they're going to be as a team or how they're going to go about figuring things out. So I'm going to reserve judgment, but I'll say around 30 wins. And obviously, when you have a team that is on the rise, there's a lot of question marks. And we've already talked about Luke Walton. Now we want to talk about the players that he's going to be coaching. Which player, young player particularly, I'm not talking about Dang, Mozgov, or Williams. Which player, young player in particular, that has been in the league for less than 3 years, that's my definition of young player, do you think is the key for a future for the Lakers that begins in earnest this season?
Steve, I love you for asking the million-dollar questions, and I got a million-dollar answer for you, brother. We already know what we're getting with D'Angelo Russell. He is a star. I have no question on D'Angelo Russell. I have no question about how good Jordan Clarkson is going to be. I have no question about our boy Larry Nance Jr. The one that is the biggest variable that can make us a super team or he's not going to be that good is Julius Randle. He needs to learn how to make a jump shot. He can attack the rim. He has a hybrid of like a Lamar Odom, Charles Barkley, Draymond Green, a big guy that could start a fast break, get the rebound, take it, throw a beautiful pass, score, play make. Julius Randle has the ability to be a super player. And today I read an article where Draymond Green said, I think Julius Randle could be better than me. That's what Draymond Green was quoted saying up in San Francisco. So he has definitely brought it to some great players playing against them head-to-head. He is represented where a player like Draymond Green can straight out say that. So I think the big, big money player that needs to step it up for this to be a super team, the one that I put the focal point on, is Julius Randle.
Well, that's high praise coming from, you know, one of the best power forwards in the NBA, Draymond Green. I only hope that Julius Randle is not so influenced by Draymond Green as he goes ball hunting on a regular basis, like Draymond Green had a bad little habit of in last year's playoffs that cost his team in the finals when he got suspended for it in Game 5 and Cleveland will make a comeback. So hopefully he's not so influenced by Draymond Green that he's doing that. But if he plays like Draymond Green, Yeah, that's going to be a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch, particularly if you get hit threes from the outside, something I know he's been working on. It's an interesting call, Sohail, and certainly Julius Randle, given his ball-handling abilities, his size, his aggression, can make a huge difference to the team, a lot like the difference that at times Lamar Odom made for the Lakers, although not as consistently as we would have liked, but I digress. But I'm going to slightly disagree with you on the key to our future, because this is a ball handlers league. And in the NBA, more than anything else, you know, when you don't have a Kobe Bryant in his prime or a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan, you need a point guard. So to me, the key to the Lakers' future that begins in earnest this season is D'Angelo Russell. Because D'Angelo Russell last year, I know with Kobe Bryant and with Byron Scott, he was stifled. I am aware of that. And I'm also aware of the incident with him and Nick Young in the, or, you know, with the video camera and basically airing Nick Young's dirty laundry with his fiance from last season. He's got some growing up to do, and he's got to do it quickly here because now the spotlight is on him. We heard about his passing ability coming out of Ohio State, and he's a great passer. I know that to be true. But he's mostly known for shooting the basketball last year. If he's going to be a great point guard, I want him to be a guy that passes the ball, gets the ball to guys like Randle and Ingram and Clarkson and Lou Williams and to Deng and also to Mozgov where he likes it, and then be a shooter. I want him to be a pure point guard because if he is, he has the ability to impact the game on so many levels. And again, I ask the question, how well is he going to play defense? I think he can play defense. I think he has the size to do it. Maybe not as much quickness as you like, but I think he has the size to do it ultimately at 6'4", 6'5", and he's got long arms himself, although not as long as Brandon Ingram. So is he going to be a guy that is going to orchestrate and run this offense the way it needs to be run? And is that going to translate to the defensive end as well in terms of getting back on defense and really competing at that end of the floor? That's what I, if he does those things, then I think everything is going to be much easier for everybody else, including Julius Randle, including Brandon Ingram and everybody else. And we, things are really going to start to take place. We might not hear so much about rumors of Russell Westbrook potentially coming to LA after this season, which is out there, and it's going to continue to be out there until Russell can prove that he can play point guard at a high enough level to where we determine we don't need to add a Westbrook or to trade for somebody, whatever the case may be. So I look at D'Angelo Russell as being the key to Lakers' future that starts this season. And feel free to respond to Seth Sohill if you need to.
D'Angelo Russell is a combo guard. I don't know if he's ever going to be the kind of guard that's a pass-first guard. I see him trying, Luke Walton trying to make him be like Steph Curry. I think Luke Walton's going to try that because he really has the scoring and passing ability to be able to be like a Steph Curry. And it's weird. I keep saying this person's like this player all from Golden State. Well, it's coming from the head coach. Luke Walton, less than a week ago, mentioned how he saw a lot of similarity in D'Angelo Russell's game and Steph Curry's. And I don't think he's just saying that. Luke Walton doesn't just say things unless he really means it. The two comparisons he made, he didn't talk about Julius Randle being like Draymond Green. He didn't say that. The two comparisons he made was the fact that Brandon Ingram plays defense like Andre Iguodala, and he's got that ability. And secondly, he talked about D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry. So I do think D'Angelo Russell is a huge part of this future. I'm so confident in D'Angelo Russell that I know we're going to have him there, but he needs the co-superstar next to him. And if I had, you know, Jordan Clarkson, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but I do think Julius Randle has the ability to be a superstar.
He definitely has the tools by which to, you know, he rebounds, he can play, although he's got to be better at positional defense, got to understand where he needs to be. But he certainly has the physicality and the size to be a good defensive player, along with the quickness. So he's got to get a little smarter. He's got a little more fun on his side. And hopefully Brian Shaw, I'm working with him on that, will improve that aspect of his game, along with the perimeter shooting that he's going to need to have in this NBA. It's going to be interesting to watch, that's for sure. We have about 10, 15 minutes to go, Sohill. And since we're talking the NBA here, we might as well talk a little bit about the NBA because we pretty much – cover the gamut for the Lakers at this point. The regular season starts soon. And when it does, obviously, we're going to be able to talk about a lot more as we go forward on the show here. Looking at the rest of the NBA, who do you like? Who's your NBA final? You have the right to change it at some point because obviously this is when we know the least about teams. You know, it's the preseason, teams not showing everything that they have. So who do you favor as far as an NBA finals matchup in June of next year?
You know what? We have super teams now. I mean, when you look at the San Antonio Spurs, and they just added Pau Gasol to that lineup. Holy cow! I am not ever going to count out the Spurs. I think they have a chance just as much as any other team this year. If I had to put money down in Vegas, I would have a hard time deciding between the Spurs and the teams that were there last year, the Cavs and obviously the Golden State Warriors after having Kevin Durant, having two of the top five players in NBA on the same team. That's not fair. But the problem with the Golden State Warriors is they have Zaza Pachulia and Anderson Varejao as their centers. They are weaker at center than the Lakers are. Okay? And everyone wants to clown on Timmy Mozgov. I'll take Mozgov any day of the week over the clowns they have at Golden State. All right? So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. The chemistry's got to be rebuilt again at Golden State with a new player coming in. Losing Harrison Barnes, who was a key factor. I just have more confidence in the Spurs and the Cavs doing something this year.
You know, the Spurs to me, adding Pau Gasol and you retire Tim Duncan, makes him a little bit more athletic, a little bit quicker, albeit Pau Gasol for him to be maximally effective for the Spurs, he's got to be healthy the majority of the year. He has had his health issues over the years. So if he's healthy for the majority of the year, you know he's going to be productive quietly. He's never going to be spectacular. He's never been that kind of player, you know, to be consistently spectacular, but consistently good. He knows how to win, obviously, and he's, you know, and he'll play very well in Popovich's system, no question about it. So it's a great addition on that level. If he's healthy, especially, he can only help that team out. So I look at the Spurs as having a shot to potentially knock off the Warriors. And you pointed out the Warriors. Their biggest issue this year is going to be how do they keep teams out of the paint? Because you don't have Bogut there anymore. You don't have Festus Ezeli anymore. You don't have Harrison Barnes there anymore. These are guys that could block shots. Andre Iguodala is a very good individual defensive player. So is Klay Thompson. So is Draymond Green. And Draymond Green can get a block or two every now and then. But that's going to be the Warriors' biggest issue this year is how are they going to keep teams out of the paint? Because if I'm playing the Warriors, I am challenging Steph Curry and anybody and trying to get into the paint to get shots at the paint, shots at the rim, and, of course, shots at the free throw line. So that's going to be their big challenge. And I know you've got a couple friends that might be listening right now that are Clipper fans. I want to ask you about the Clippers. Is this the year? I mean, the Clippers got bit with the injury bug last year, but you still get the feeling that this kind of franchise is kind of cursed, even you know, coming out of the Donald Sterling era and having an owner firmly committed to winning in Steve Ballmer. Is this the year the Clippers can finally get into the Final Four, so to speak, of getting into the Western Conference Finals and possibly the NBA Finals? Do you look at this as their best shot to finally break through and get to the highest levels of the NBA in the playoffs by getting into something that has the word, into a playoff series that has the word finals in it?
You know what? You say best shot. I'll give you one better than best shot. This is their last shot. Next year, Chris Paul is a free agent. Blake Griffin's a free agent. Do you think they would like to wear purple and gold? Maybe. Who knows? This is the Clippers' last shot at doing it. Blake Griffin has been coached by Kevin Garnett. Doc Rivers asked him, please, teach this man how to play defense. Teach him something. Please. So KG came in and teaching Blake Griffin how to shoot, how to play defense. Blake Griffin's improved his three-point shot. I don't know, a guy like that's going to be shooting threes. Is that a good thing? If the chemistry issue continues where the Clippers are a better team without Blake Griffin in the game, then Blake Griffin is going to be traded at the trade deadline. This is the last shot the Clippers have. I really don't see anything changing from the fact of what happened the last couple of years. They do okay in the regular season, but the playoffs happen. They get hurt. They just flame out. They got lucky a couple years ago against the Spurs in a lucky Game 7 victory on the night. Our boy did that huge fight and lost, unfortunately. Cinco de Mayo disaster. But it was the greatest day in Clipper history, Cinco de Mayo that day, when they beat the Spurs and moved them to the next round, second round. But you asked me the question. I don't think the Clippers have it, but I will support them in the sense of any kid at below the age of 13 years old that's a Clipper fan, I will hook them up with free Clipper slippers, because we know the Clippers are going to slip away and these kids are going to need some kind of traction. So Clipper slippers, for all those kids that are just hoping on the Clippers to still do something, I got you slippers.
Here's the thing. Well, maybe those slippers will create a Cinderella story ending for the Clippers. But here's where I see the downfall of the Clippers. Their head coach is their general manager. And when Glenn Doc Rivers could just be a head coach, he did pretty well with that Boston team, going to two finals, winning one, and nearly winning another one. Happily that he did it over the Lakers a second time. I think the Clippers and Doc Rivers have built this team to be a very good regular season team. But it's not a very good playoff team, because there's too many guys on this roster that are not sufficient enough defensively. And since Glenn Doc Rivers lost Tom Thibodeau to the head coaching reins, his defenses haven't been quite as good as when he had Tom Thibodeau in tow to be his defensive coach. That's hurt him much more than people would like to admit, because Rivers has a reputation of being a very good head coach, and he is. But him being the general manager and the coach of this team and basically sticking with a pad hand, a Blake Griffin, who more often than not disappears late in games. He starts games well. He doesn't always finish them. He's not the best defensive player, even though he clearly has the physical tools and athleticism to be a better defensive player than he's been. Chris Paul's a very good defensive player. DeAndre Jordan is definitely one of the best last lines of defense in the NBA. Certainly a guy that you don't want to meet at the rim when you're kind of getting a shot up over them. An excellent help defender and a good individual defender himself, but mostly a help defender. And then J.J. Redick is a very good defensive player himself. I don't see Austin Rivers being a very good defensive player. Chris Paul's getting a little bit older. He's had some injury issues. Everybody else. To me, the Clippers' last best chance was last season. I don't think it's going to be any different this year unless they make a move to reinforce this team with defense and if DeAndre Jordan could become a more consistent offensive player. That's why Griffin is so important to this team, because DeAndre Jordan, even though he's a guy that can get 20-20, you know, in a game when Blake Griffin's not playing, most of that 20 points is close to the rim. But when you get into the playoffs, you get a good defensive team. They're not going to let that happen. You can do that against the majority of teams in the NBA, but not a playoff-caliber team deep in the playoffs. They're going to shut that off. So that's why Blake Griffin is so important to this team, because of DeAndre Jordan's deficiencies offensively, even though he's a guy that will get you 20 every now and then. So to me, the Clippers are what they are. They're a playoff team that won't go any further because they are built for the regular season more than they're built for the playoffs. Unless they make a move potentially involving Blake Griffin or to try to get something for him, that's going to be difficult because now teams might be like, well, why should we trade for him when he's going to be a free agent? He's probably going to end up leaving anyways because the Clippers aren't going anywhere. So that's going to be a difficult deal to make if they try to make it, if they feel like they need to make that move. So I think the Clippers, to a similar result this year, but maybe not as injury prone, not as many injuries, but they're, to me, a team that feels like they're more built for the regular season than they are the playoffs.
Yep. You know, there's one other team that we like to talk about. We're Laker fans, right, Steve? The mighty green leprechaun, the Celtics. The only team that has more championships than us. What do you think about the Celtics, Steve?
I think the Celtics playing in the Eastern Conference, well, you added Al Horford, who's definitely an upgrade at center as to what they've had, but he's also getting a little bit up there in age. You still got LeBron James at his prime, and Kyrie Irving certainly stepped up big last year. Watch out for Indiana as well. I don't think much of Chicago. Watch out for Miami also. They got some players down there. And Toronto also is obviously going to be good, having re-signed their entire backcourt with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. So I think the Celtics are a very interesting team in the East. They kind of feel like the Clippers in the East. They're very good defensively. Offensively, they were one of the better teams in the league last year, particularly in the Eastern Conference. But it feels like, they need a little bit more experience and maybe a little bit more veteran leadership in there. You add Isaiah Thomas, who's been a godsend to them. You pick up Al Horford. We're going to see how those guys impact the team on the offensive, defensive end of the floor. So I think they have a shot to get out of the East, you know, just because the East is so top-heavy, but it's going to be difficult. But it feels like they need a little bit more experience, and keep in mind Chicago adding Dwayne Wade, who if he could play like he did last year, they're going to be tough. But the Boston Celtics feel like a team of the future at this point. The future is coming. I don't know if it's their time this season, but as much as I hate to admit this, they are definitely going in the right direction. And, you know, they're going to be a contender in the East, but I don't think they come out of the East going to the finals this year, maybe after this year or 2 years from now. It feels like they could get there if they keep this core team intact. And if Al Horford can do what he's capable of and Isaiah Thomas continues to be a guy that they can lean on at the end of games, they'll close out those games.
Yeah. What I'm most impressed of with the Celtics is their management. I mean, their head coach is awesome. He figured out better than anybody how to play against the Cavs. He also plays brilliantly against the Warriors. They are so freaking well coached. I am so impressed with their head coach. And then you got Danny Ainge, the most amazing used car salesman working as a GM, having draft picks all over the place. And he might be able to pull off something. He might be able to sucker Doc Rivers into giving him Blake Griffin for 4 first-round picks, a bag of peanuts, and some player on the I don't know, one of the Celtic players. But I think Celtics are in a very interesting position where this whole season, first half of the season, you're going to see Danny Ainge with all these draft picks, with all these players, he's going to pull something off. If he's able to pull off a blockbuster trade, then I'll be afraid of the Celtics. They need a superstar. They don't have a superstar. They have a couple of very good players. Avery Bradley plays great defense. Isaiah Thomas, awesome scorer. Al Horford, consistent stretch four. You know, but they need one more. If Danny Ainge can pull it off, which he has many times, he got so much for pawning off Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And neither of them are ever going to get the kind of love Kobe Bryant got retiring. But you know what? They got a ton of draft picks for it. Let's see what happens with those draft picks. I will never cheer for those Celtics as a Laker fan, but you got to respect what they're doing.
Well, yeah, it's a very stable. They're very well run, as you said, with Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens as the head coach, who has made the transition from college to the post very, very successfully, very smooth, very fluid. Just a fundamentally sound team that generally does not beat themselves. So we'll see. They certainly are much more likely to get to the playoffs this year than the Lakers are, unfortunately. But the Lakers are in the right direction as well. We'll just see if our wonderkind management team of Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss can finally get a ride now that Kobe Bryant and all the past seems to be behind us and we can move forward. So that's what the season is about for the Lakers, for the Celtics. They're trying to contend for a spot in the NBA Finals in the East. Having a chance to do that because the Eastern Conference just doesn't have enough good teams out there like the West does. But we're going to wrap it up here, folks. It's been a hell of a first show here coming back for the core show for Dallas Sports Radio. All things Lakers. The future is now. New team, same dream. It's going to be a process. Enjoy that process. Enjoy more editions of Dire Sports Radio as we move forward here. Talking a whole lot of Lakers with the NFL as well. And the Dodgers also, if they continue to make a deep run into the playoffs, not being in the LCS. So we will be back in the next week or two. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening to the course over Dire Sports Radio, being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill. For Mr. Five-Star 411 himself, Sohail Majdi, I am Steve Itzkowitz. We'll be back with you next time, reminding you that Dire Sports Radio is sports talk radio for true sports diehards. Have a good evening, everybody, and a great week.
Cheerio.